Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Joe Mazumdar, editor of Exploration Insights. Now, Joe, I wanted to bring you back on the show because, quite frankly, look, we can talk about the gold price or commodities prices and the broad environment of why we think commodities prices might keep going higher, why they still might be correcting in terms of, say, the precious metals, but I feel like we have chatted about that month after month after month, especially when it comes to the precious metals. And really what I like about reading your newsletter and your research is when you dive into individual companies and the broad aspect of the stocks in the resource sector. So that's where I want to start here is that we look at, say, the gold price or the silver price, and at best, I think we can say they're trading in a range. You can also say, if you take a certain time frame, that they're also still very much in this downtrend. Or you go even further back and you say, oh, look at this. It's a big long-term bullish picture, and we're just going through a general cyclical downtrend during this bull market. Fact of the matter is, the stocks are still getting hit. There's a handful of stocks that are continuing to break out. Great Bear is on my radar, and hey, that is just recently at all-time highs. It really reminds me of 2016, 2017, where it was a handful of stocks outperforming the market and the rest of the sector broadly falling. Now, we are in a very different environment than back in 2016. We can get into some of those factors, but when it comes to the precious metal stock sector, what have you been noticing out there, Joe? What's the environment look like to you?
Thanks again for having me. But if we stick to gold, you know, one thing that stands out is that the gold market as a whole, in terms of mine production, if we don't keep exploring and actually exploring and finding things that actually make economic sense, then we potentially have peaked production last year. And so, you know, if you look at the production profiles that, you know, that Newmont and some other companies are putting out that are 5 to 10 years, you know, basically they're flat production profiles to potentially down. And so when you look at that and you put into the fact that, you know, most of these companies, the larger companies, have booked reserves at 1250, you know, and so if they increase it to 1500, you know, there's ounces that could come on if they're willing to do that. But if they keep the reserve prices at that level, then they're going to have to find reserves that can fit their pipeline, as they have to add 7 to 8 million ounces a year of reserve just to meet their production profile. Balance sheet wise, they're in good positions just because of the reserve price that I told you. And balance sheets are good, and they could absorb a lower gold price and still generate operating cash flow. But then the question is, how do they not even grow, just run to stand still? And so if exploration is not finding the discoveries, which is what we're seeing, you know, we're seeing a lot of sort of misappropriated funds for exploration that's not finding assets that people want that work in the kind of environment that the gold companies are looking at going forward, a more conservative environment. So I'm looking for those kind of exploration companies and development companies, potentially, even though there's a risk of cost inflation, that could actually bring projects that majors or even mid-tiers, because, you know, we talked about the Agnico Kirkland mega merger, but now recently we also heard about the Calibre acquisition of Fiore. And so consolidation going forward will be important for all these companies to gain a scale that gives them liquidity to garner attention in this market. And consolidation, I think, is part of what we'll see going forward, but also more M&A for those projects that you know, people want to put into their portfolio. Like, the trend has been to buy producing assets. So are we going to see some of these development or exploration assets now starting to get acquired?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Joe. And we've definitely seen a few different deals on the producer side. Even last year, and 2 years ago, we saw things like Alistair and SSR combining, or we saw the Rocks Gold and the Fortuna combination. So there's been a few M&A deals. Nothing that's been as earth-shattering as some of the big mega mergers like the Kirkland Lake Agnico. But we even discussed off mic, even the royalty space has had a little consolidation with the Gold Royalty Corp snatching up Ely Gold and then Abitibi Royalties and Golden Valley to mass up. So you think this theme of companies massing up to grow in size, but also visibility, maybe get more analysts, maybe get more inclusion in funds, is more of the direction we'll see moving forward? Is that kind of the direction you see some of this industry moving?
Yes, I mean, I think you need that scale to garner investor attention. Whether it's a gaining a U.S. listing and then, but definitely a little company that's got a small amount of cash flow may only ever be valued at cash until people notice it. And so what we're seeing is that these companies now that can garner the scale of market cap trading liquidity. And when they bring those kind of assets into their portfolio, they'll get a premium because they're blanketing it with a bigger liquidity envelope. Whereas that little company could never break out of its own liquidity crunch. And so they would be more willing to sell themselves into a bigger portfolio of assets, gain that diversification liquidity that they're and take shares of that company because they know that those shares will grow because they've added an asset that would be accretively grow within that portfolio because of all their attributes. And so you could see that happening where a company like if you look at like Fiore did a their management team did a great job of bringing Pan back around and restarting it, but the problem was it was a 40,000 to 50,000 ounce heap leach project, and it was expensive for them to drill it out to beyond, let's say, a 4 to 5 year mine life, and so scale wise, it never actually broke that kind of 100,000 mark that some people need. To give it more liquidity. And then their next project, Gold Rock, might not come on in about 2 to 3 years or beyond. And they would need to use the cash flow from Pan to pay for it. And so they wouldn't be generating a lot of operating cash flow. And so to sell it into a bigger portfolio like Calibre that's got 200,000 ounces granted in Nicaragua, now they could have 250 to 275 if and when they get Gold Rock going. And that just adds scale. And now you have a more diversified portfolio, you're more liquid. That just makes Pan and Gold Rock look a lot better because now nobody's wondering where the money's going to come from because hopefully they can generate enough cash flow to develop these projects. So yes, I do think scale is important at all levels.
Yeah, I really like that acquisition that Caliber made, but I think that these corporate actions, aren't they also giving us a pretty good indication of what the market environment is right now? Because look, the smaller companies, they're not getting attention. I think also because there's less investors paying attention, and quite frankly, that price that they paid for Fiore when they announced that deal, Fiore was about 40% off of its highs that were set August of last year. So stocks, companies broadly have gotten cheaper, and these companies, large or small, are going after a smaller audience of investors, at least currently. So they do need to be bigger to get that attention. Isn't this telling us more a bigger picture of the, I guess, lack of investors in the sector too?
Yes, it's definitely not the kind of valuations we were getting last year. Like from what I understand, the Fiore Calibre initiation of talks was only this year around the summer, early summer. And so between the due diligence then, that was a quick transaction. And one of the reasons it was a quick transaction because it was friendly and the Fiore team sort of saw those issues of liquidity drying up, not getting noticed, but also in their own mine plan. And they also put, a bullet in their last presentation prior to the acquisition that, they're looking to grow through acquisition. And then they problematically, they couldn't see anything to buy that made sense. And so, you know, their lack of ability or capacity to acquire more projects in Nevada that they thought that they could accretively buy and put into production, just wasn't available. And then to raise the money to do it, wasn't there. So they just thought, well, okay, we're, you know, these guys have come along, they're interested, you know, let's look at it and, you know, we'll make a deal. Because they basically run out of space, you know. This is the quickest way to give shareholders a decent return without having to go back to the equity markets and, you know, find cash to build Gold Rock or, you know, use their shares to make another transaction. They just weren't, of that mind. And so right now, if you see companies, and it's probably are coming back to an environment where people can see management teams that are in a corner, have decent assets, but don't know how to go forward, those people with the scale, access to capital, and also generating, you know, operating cash flow, can make those kind of transactions again, you know, for a premium, but still it could be potentially accretive, even if gold price is at $1,750.
Well, Joe, what is your thoughts on some of the majors and some of the mid-tiers also taking all these different strategic positions in the smaller companies? You had mentioned that we've mostly seen production companies being taken over, but the developers or the advanced explorers, when are we going to see another Kaminak kind of transaction, for example? We did see one with GT Gold from Goldcorp, but just what do you think these strategic positions are going to turn into the fruit of M&A transactions? Because we've seen a lot of them put in place, but very few pull the trigger and take over the earlier stage company.
Well, I mean, I did a little bit of this with Newmont when I worked in corporate development. And, you know, you would take that 10% or 19.9% in a company to get a foothold and just basically give the indication to everybody else, okay, this one's mine. And then you're taking the chance, you know, in terms of exploration, you're trying to help them technically as much as you can, because your big idea is that there's a potential for getting your kind of sized asset from their land package, and you want to help them do it. You want to help them to do it through capital resources, through an equity transaction. You want to help them to do it through human resources by giving your technical capacity and also your technical expertise with respect to, you know, geochemistry, geophysics, mapping, geology, your database, whatever, to help them accelerate the process and give them all the tools available to find something that you want. That's the reason for that. But it, you know, the chances of finding that deposit, the probability doesn't change. You know, the only advantage is that for you as an investor, if the Newmonts or the Barricks or whomever put the footprint in, then you're thinking, okay, they've done all the background work, you know, and they basically picked this project. So that gives me some kind of confidence that it could be something that they want, you know, but still drilling and all that, it may not be, because that's still exploration. So it doesn't, just because they do the 19.9% doesn't mean it's a tier one asset. It just means that the probability that there is one there just goes up a little bit higher.
Joe, how concerned do we need to be, or the overall sector need to be, for the majors over this last quarter, that even with some generally higher metals prices, we definitely saw their costs creep up and some of their operations had some troubles? Now, there are plenty of excuses for this, but fact of the matter is, a lot of the bullish arguments were that the majors were building up nice cash positions and they were going to be deploying that cash into smaller companies. However, that last quarter, I think, has put everyone on pause a little bit, because the majors did struggle a little bit more than everyone thought they were going to.
Yeah, I mean, we sort of saw that margin, you know, contraction, one, because gold prices were lower than they were, let's say, last year during this quarter, but also the cost creep from labor, cost creep from energy, and now the issues with the supply chain have all come, and then layering in some places that people work, let's say in Latin America or some other spots, that still having COVID impact their productivity. And so all of that combined, yes, we have seen cost creep and margin contraction. And we've seen that with gold producers and silver producers. So that's definitely something that's happening. And it's also something that, is impacting people that are developing projects. So at the outset, I was talking about the decline in the production profile. So we have to develop new assets to bring in more production. But right now, the few companies that are actually developing these projects that will be generating gold production in the next 2 to 3 years are being hit by capital escalation because of all the same factors that I was talking about earlier, whether it's labor, whether it's energy, or not only labor costs, but also availability. You know, and then how long does the construction timeline take now that long lead items take longer to get, you know? So all of that is now impact your development projects like your Côté, probably your Magino, potentially your Hard Rock, you know, and this might be a temporal window of a year or two. But, we know from the chip shortage that, you know, it's harder to buy a new car right now, you know, so it's impacting everybody. But I guess the focus more from the operation standpoint is really the development companies that are non-cash flowing not non-cash flowing, but they're spending a big wad of cash. Like Côté is very important for IAM Gold in terms of their valuation. Magino is very important to Argonaut. And I would say that Equinox is, you know, proportion of Hard Rock they're very keen on, and it is probably a significant part of their future valuation.
Well, Joe, I'm glad you got into the developers. That was going to be one of my last questions for you here in this segment, and that is, how do you value the developers in this kind of a market where many of them still have much lower gold assumption prices of $1,200, $1,300? Other companies have ratcheted them up closer to where the gold price is today, maybe at $1,500, maybe $1,600 gold. And then the other side of the component is we see these input costs going up, and we have to figure out, is inflation going to be transitory or not? How much longer will lumber and fuel and steel be at these prices? So I feel like they've been not just overlooked and not just smashed down with the rest of the sector, but there's some wild mismatches between their economic studies and their feasibility studies. Some of them have two development projects, and they're still nowhere even in the normal ballpark of where they'd be valued. So how are you valuing development companies, and what do you look for, and what do you stay away from?
Well, the thing, if you take a development project right now, look at the capital estimate and look at the date of the capital estimate. And so that was part of the reason that IAM Gold's Côté project increase in capital looked so significant, is because their feasibility study was based on numbers from 2018. And also what happens is whatever the date of that feasibility study, the estimates are basically compiled 6 months to a year before. And so it's even more earlier than that. And now you're comparing it to what we've seen is at least 12 months of inflation, right through the entire market, not just, you know, what you're talking about, steel and labor, fuel, cement, what have you. Anything that you want to get your hands on is more expensive than it was 12 months ago. Okay, and so if your estimate is stale, then you know there's a good chance that it's probably 10% higher, 10 to 15% higher than it was before. So what's important is to find out if you've got a development company, and I found that when I used to cover Torex Gold. Torex Gold did a really good job of showing people what they'd spent, what they've committed, which is very important. So when they've committed 80% of their capital, that means that you're done. You know, that means that capital's been spent, it's just on its way, and you've only got 20% that you're exposed to for escalation. But now with the supply chain issues, even though you might have spent that 80%, it doesn't mean that you'll get those items within the time frame that will get you to meet your production schedule. And if any of those items fit in your sort of critical path timeline and come late, then suddenly you might be sitting on your hands for a little while and spending money regardless while you're not making cash and running down your debt while you're waiting for these parts or a ball mill or a semi-autogenous grinding circuit, what have you. That's the other part that the supply chain adds with respect to risk. And so when you're looking at these guys, you want to say, well, have you put down payments on your long lead items? What's the critical path? And then what are the risks? And then if it's in some parts of the world, like Western Australia, and could be in Canada, how's the labor availability? Can you get people? Like I've talked to Orezone Bombore, they're pretty confident that, they haven't seen the same kind of escalation that you're seeing in other parts of the country. So what we're talking about, might be different depending on the geography that the project is in.
All right, Joe, we're going to wrap it up there. I think some very good information to consider for all of the investors that are focused on the stocks, and rightfully so, right? The stocks did perform very well, but unfortunately have been in about a year and a half correction now. But some of the better stocks have definitely already recovered, and we have seen some pretty interesting M&A, but it definitely is not that environment where you can buy any resource stock, especially the juniors right now, and expect them to go up immediately. Joe, thanks as always for your time, buddy. I'll post a link to the Explorations Insights website so everyone can find out more about the newsletter, and we'll be having you back on in another few weeks. Really appreciate your time, Joe. Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.